This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 132, where we're going to catch up on a whole bunch of cloud news, recorded live June 2nd, 2016. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid is a Microsoft Gold partner whose mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of technology. Valid is always on the lookout for consultants, architects, and engineers. Do you know Azure, BI, and Analytics, .NET, Office 365, or SharePoint? Look them up on Valid.nl.
Morning, AC.
Morning, CJ.
How are things, buddy?
It's doing pretty good. It's been a long time since we've done a show together, I guess. Been a couple of weeks after vacations and busy schedules and such.
Oh, man, I really missed you.
I did too, man. I really did too. I didn't miss anybody or anything 2 weeks ago when I was in Mexico.
That's fair. But I did. You were torturing me on your Facebook page by posting photos of your feet and the beach. Pretty much all week.
Yeah. It's when I wasn't sleeping, eating, or drinking. Yeah, I was taking a picture or so. But I did my best to unplug. I think I did go like intentionally set a few days of zero technology. But yeah, man, things are fun right now. I'm wrapping up like two or three projects to get into another project. The one I'm doing right now is fun because I'm building an API explorer for two different Azure endpoints. The Azure billing APIs. So I'm building, as I've mentioned in the show, I was recently working on a project with the partner teams at Microsoft, specifically the CSP program, where partners can resell Office 365 and Azure subscriptions to customers. And we've decided to add two more modules, one on each of the different billing API endpoints. So the billing APIs in Azure are currently in preview. One of them is for rate card. And that's basically getting pricing information for different regions and different locales and different Azure subscriptions. And so you can see all the different data from different data centers and all the different price points and such.
Gotcha.
The other one is about usage data. So you can get a list of all of your Azure usage up to the minute as it's been reported, as well as your historical stuff. So using those two APIs, you could see like, you know, does it make sense to run my stuff in the East US data center or can I run in a different data center? And using that data, if you were even able to extend this and add things like Google or add things like AWS, you could even see, you know, what would be the best cloud for me to use and what would have been the most expensive. So with these two different modules I'm doing, I'm building a little ASP.NET MVC app to show the data as part of the demos in there. And it's fun. It's interesting. Is it something that, I mean, I want to use to try and, you know, see how our usage has been with running like the Orchard site and training over time and such. So it's a cool little project. That's the work thing I'm doing now. The two fun things I'm doing is I'm having a little bit of a refocus on a personal side for my fish tank that I have in my office.
Ooh.
And I've got about 15 or I think it's about 15 fish showing up via mail order. They just shipped and it should show up tomorrow. That's Friday, June 3rd, which is cool because I've done this a few times, but the kids have never been home when I get them. And so they ship overnight and they're here by like 10 a.m. The next day. And so you've got to get them out of the box they all come in individual bags, put the bags into the tank, let the water temperatures kind of neutralize across the tank and the bags. And then you cut them open and then they cut the bags open and free the fish. So
Free Willy.
There's that one. I'm doing a whole replumbing project right now. It's all with like soft acrylic or plastic piping, and I'm switching it all over to hard PVC with shutoff valves and flow control and all that crap. And
sounds then, fancy, man.
Yeah. The last one, though, is the tech one, man. I'm building a Raspberry Pi-based controller and a new canopy that's going to control the lights. It's going to monitor the temperature. It's going to monitor different chemical levels that I have to monitor. And also automate the whole process of doing water changes. So like opening up solenoids and valves, closing valves, flow control, looking at float sensors, and all the data is going to be pushed from the Raspberry Pi. It's going to be a cool IoT project, pushed from the Raspberry Pi up to Azure, and then having alerts kick in and notifications, a little mobile app that I can look at, and website, and all that kind of crap. So it'd be pretty cool. I'll make it to where people can, you know, look at this stuff in a public sense as well, to where you can see the project. I'm gonna do it all in the open, so it'll be fun.
Very cool. Very nice.
Yeah.
Nice little geeky project. Love it.
Yeah. I mean, there will definitely be a board with lights to where I can see lights turning on and off, just so I can see 7 Plus, to just kind of have a cool little, like, you know, light board of what's going on. So
yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. How about you?
Obviously, working away. We're deep in dev and doing a bunch of perf testing on databases and all sorts of stuff at the moment. So up to my armpits in code and logging and statistics and all that sort of stuff. It's really fun, actually. It's terrifying, but fun. You run a big test and you're like, I hope this works. And when it doesn't, you hit one roadblock and you figure out what went wrong, and you try again and things get better and you iterate on it and you sort of work out some of the bottlenecks and kinks in your code and then success, hopefully. So, it's been really fun, actually. It's good.
Very cool.
Yes. So today on the show, we've got some news and things to go through. But before we get stuck into that, we thought we'd take a couple of quick questions and talk about a review and some feedback that we've got. But before we start that, I thought we should maybe dive into our Know Your Microsoft Cloud segment.
Bingo! Yeah, Installment number two.
Yeah, I loved your one in the last episode with the document DB topic and things like that. So this week I've got a slightly different one for our audience about knowing your Microsoft Cloud, but this one's sort of more on the consumer side of the Microsoft Cloud as opposed to the business side of Azure or Office 365. And in particular, this one is some work that I did a bit of work on while I was at Microsoft, but it's the integration options that are available with things like Word Online and Excel Online that people really don't know about. And it's kind of a big deal. We talked about it a little bit on the show when the news first came out, but things are starting to roll out around the world now in different services. And the one I wanted to talk about was the Dropbox integration with Office Online that people don't know too much about. So if you have a document, a Word document or an Excel document or a PowerPoint document in Dropbox, which obviously people use, like a DocX file or what have you, when you go into Dropbox, you can go preview the document and they have their previewer and things. But up in the top right-hand corner, there's a little open button. Beside the open button, there's a drop-down. And if you drop down that drop-down, in the menu, there is a Microsoft Word Online button. And if you click that, it'll send the document off to Microsoft's Office Online service and actually open the document for editing. And so you can edit the document, you can work on the document, you can read it, review it, all that sort of stuff. And it's seamlessly saving back into Dropbox in the background. So if you don't have Office on your laptop, or you're at a kiosk or something like that, you can go work on your documents in Dropbox right from within the web browser. And you're using Microsoft's sort of not native Office, but you know what I mean? It's a native Office viewer, so to speak, and editing experience. And you get the full fidelity sort of Office experience. So it's, you're not looking at it through some sort of hokey online viewer that does a half-assed job at showing your documents. You're using real Office.
Oh, very cool.
So this is some of the new integration options with Office Online that are available that are coming to some partners like Dropbox. Salesforce is another one to let you do sort of native Office viewing in the web without having to use some sort of hokey tools to do it.
Oh, there you go. That's I've used that a little bit too, with like being able to open documents straight from Dropbox and saving them back to Office 365, or keep them just in Dropbox if you want to just work straight in Dropbox. And it works really cool. I like the little, I don't know if you get this on Windows, but I like when you have the Dropbox client installed on OS X, it actually adds a little, I don't know what you call it, but it's like a little widget that gets put into Outlook.
Yeah.
And you can see the history or whatever. It has a nice rich integration with Dropbox.
Yeah. So you don't have to be using OneDrive basically to get the best sort of online Office Docs editing experience. You can choose, Dropbox as your storage location, but still use the Microsoft viewers and editors for working with your documents.
I really like that too, because I had tried OneDrive at the beginning, or OneDrive for Business, I should say. I tried at the beginning. I got really frustrated. I gave up on it. I know they had the new Sync client, next-gen Sync client that they added late last year, or they came out late last year. So I moved everything over from Dropbox back over to OneDrive for Business. I tried it. I tried sharing some stuff and everything over the, from like, I think November of 2015 through like February of 2016. And I still didn't feel like I had anywhere near as good or as clean in a, no nonsense, no like having to put any thought into it as I did with Dropbox. So I moved everything back out. And so it's nice to know that I can still edit Word docs easily and both in the client and in the web client if I'm using Dropbox and, you know, working with Word docs or Excel spreadsheets and
yeah,
such.
Yeah, and it doesn't mess them up. You know,
yeah.
There's a bunch of other tools that sort of do let you do this, but you often lose formatting or preview doesn't look accurate or something like that. So
yeah,
that's a little bit on the consumer side of Microsoft Cloud integration with other partners.
Cool. Very cool.
Hey, now we've got some, we've got a new review I thought we'd quickly mention in iTunes, 5-star review, and it's titled One of My Must Listen To Podcasts. And it says, I found this podcast a few weeks ago and has become my, one of my must listen to podcasts. Great way to keep up with the ever changing and evolving Microsoft Cloud. Apple, please don't make me enter this review a fourth time because you were too lazy to check my nickname before letting me type and losing everything. So thank you for that review by Can't Check Nickname. And so, yes, that's a nice 5-star review. I've got a quick shout out for if you are listening to this and you don't use iTunes, if you use something like Overcast on iOS to listen to your podcasts on your iPhone, there is a recommend feature in Overcast. We'd love you to click that button. It'll help us be more discoverable to more people. If you do get it through iTunes, obviously a 5-star review there would be great. And if you're a Google listener, if you're using Android, we've recently launched the podcast in the Google Play Podcasts store or catalog or whatever you want to call it in Google Play. So if you want to use that app, then we'd love to go have you go grab the show from there and also review us there too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Those reviews do help. I mean, it sounds like we're being, you know, self-serving when we say that, you know, hey, more reviews or 5-star reviews help more people find it. Let's just get more listeners, but it does help the show. I mean, it does help us with, we are going to try and do a push for more sponsors in the next few months, and having more revenue coming in honestly helps us offset the bills that CJ and I incur from this. And even more so, it allows us to do some cool things that we may be able to do. You hear like other shows do about big giveaways and stuff cool segments and stuff. So we're not trying to get rich off this. And we just want to make a better show.
And also the reviews bump us up in the listings. And so more people will find us and we'll get more listeners.
Absolutely.
Cool. Hey, so you've got some stuff, right? You got a feedback question or something like that?
I do. It was last week, or maybe the week before, I saw a tweet pop up from Tom Riesing, who works at Microsoft, started working at Microsoft recently.
Yeah.
And he posted the tweet and said, yeah, I just left a listener question, recorded listener question on your site. And I was like, you did? I didn't see that. When you leave a comment on our feedback form on our website, we're supposed to get an email. And so I went back and looked, and sure enough, I saw the comment was actually logged on the site or logged in the system on the site, but we didn't get the email. And thankfully, one thing led to another, and I realized that a deprecated feature from Orchard that was actually deprecated 2 years ago, which is about the time, which is soon after I actually launched Orchard and we launched on my blog and we also launched it for the podcast. That deprecated feature was finally removed. And I was using that feature to actually send emails. It was called the Orchard.rules module.
Interesting.
So, yeah, they had switched over to using workflows. And when I upgraded the site just a few weeks ago and we got the nice big performance boost coming out of the site, that's when we lost that module, and I didn't even realize that we weren't getting email updates. So I saw a bunch of comments that had come in, not only from the podcast, but also from my blog. But hey, Tom recorded a question. He took the time to record a question. So let me go ahead and let me play the question that Tom recorded, and then you and I can I'll address it, and you can actually throw your comments in as well.
Sounds good.
So let's roll the question.
Hey, Chris, AC, Tom Riesing here. New Microsoft employee, just finished listening to episode 129, and I've got a comment/question. AC, I noticed in your intro, I don't know if you noticed this, but you still have Link as one of the technologies you cover on the Microsoft Cloud Show. And I wonder, it's been a year since Skype for Business Server was released, and I don't hear you guys talking about Link so much anyway, or Skype for Business. So I wonder if you're going to update that sometime and take that old name I know how much we love those renames. I wonder if you're going to take that old name out of the intro. Anyway, great shows. I've been listening on my commute. I have a very short commute now to Microsoft, so I've caught the last three episodes, starting with 127 with Dan Holm, my new coworker, and I've been enjoying them. So looking forward to more coming out and catching up on more on my commute.
Okay, so that was Tom Reising's questions from Microsoft. And, you know, he brings up a good point. You know, in our intro, we make a reference to things like Link. And we don't, you know, Link has since been renamed to Skype for Business. And you and I have done a few, you and I have actually done a few things here. You know, since we recorded those, you know, like you probably hear a lot of podcasts, we don't record the intro segment and the outro segments to the podcast. We don't do them every week. We actually recorded a stock WAV file that our producer includes in the show when he mixes it down for us. And same thing with the ads. And I'll be completely transparent here. We've actually gone through and we've done a little edits to the WAV file by cutting things out and inserting stuff over time so that we didn't have to re-record the entire thing. But I think Tom has highlighted something that you and I should do, CJ. We should probably re-record our intros and our outros again.
I think it might be time.
Yes. I think last time we did it was, 2 years ago?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was in a hotel room in Chicago, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, during the polar vortex, we froze our butts off.
Yep, that's right. So that's fair feedback, Tom. I think, yeah, it was a good solid couple of years ago since we recorded that intro and outro, and we could probably do a better job of keeping up with some naming changes since then.
Yeah, not only that, man, it kind of made me think like, oh, wait a minute, you know what? We have a little disclaimer at the bottom of the website that still calls it Windows Azure, not Microsoft Azure. So,
oh man, we've got to keep up with those things.
So that was a nice little slap in the face, Tom. I do appreciate it. But hey, let me actually address your you didn't slap us in the face. Your comment caused us to slap each other in the face. But hey, let me just address one little thing here. You're right. We should not. We do mention Link, but yet we don't talk about Link at all. And because Link has been renamed to Skype for Business, and nor do we really talk about Skype for Business, though. So, I mean, that's fair. I don't think you're going to see, you don't see us talk too much about Skype for Business because I don't mean to be a jerk here, but there's not a whole lot really to talk about. I guess you and I have kind of ranted a bit on it where, you know, we haven't had a client for Skype for Business on OS X. I know there is a preview one that you can do calls on, but it's, I wouldn't even call it beta. It's pretty much alpha. It's not very stable and isn't full featured. Mm. But I think that you're probably going to see, you will probably see the majority of the content, at least from my point of view. And CJ, you know, throw your two cents after you hear my two cents. But I think you're going to mostly see stuff that's related to Microsoft Azure for developers and features, Office 365 for developers and features, and as far as Office 365 goes. I think we're probably going to see us mostly cover things that are Office 365 from an all-up, SharePoint specifically, maybe some Exchange stuff. And I guess Skype, when it comes into play, but I don't anticipate seeing a whole lot of stuff that you're going to hear us kind of highlight. And then from those points, we'll also talk about the competitive landscape that you'll see things in, primarily from Amazon Web Services or AWS and the Google Cloud Platform, the GCP as well.
Yeah, I think we've covered a little bit about Skype for Business, mostly around PSTN calling, cloud calling features and plans, you know, the ability to call out from Skype for Business now when you're in Office 365 to landlines and mobile phones and things like that. So, you know, we've covered it sort of a little bit from the Office 365 side, but not so much on the technical side and implementation and development details and things.
Yeah, agreed.
Excellent. All right. So thanks for the feedback, Tom. If anybody else has feedback for us or a question they want to send in, you can go to our website and you can actually record a little WAV or an MP3 file and point us to it, and we'll play your question or piece of feedback on the show like we just did with Tom. So feel free to do that. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, Tom used SoundCloud, which you can create an account and create, easily record a question and send it over to us. So definitely do it like that, or with the tool that we use now for recording the podcast, we use Zencastr, and you can do that too. Those are both free. Post the file to somewhere where we can download it, and there you go.
Yeah, excellent. Hey, so what do we dive into? Some meat of the show, some news.
Yeah, there's been a lot of stuff recently, hasn't there?
And we, you know, it's been a few weeks since we covered some news items, so we'll try and cover off a few of the ones that we thought have been interesting over the last few weeks. So, without further ado, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely kick us off. So I'll say one thing is that Forrester actually had a nice big announcement that came out in this past month in May, where they name Azure a leader in big data Hadoop cloud solutions. So they recognize both the strength of both Microsoft's offerings as well as their strategy by putting Microsoft in the leader ripple of the big data Hadoop cloud wave. So it notes that leaders have the most comprehensive and scalable and integrated platform. Microsoft was called out for having a cloud-first strategy that's paying off. And Microsoft has said in the coming year that they're going to continue to focus on delivering the highest value for their customers and partners through innovations that make big data and analytics even more accessible. For more information, you can check out a link that we will post in the show notes that you can go take a look at on the Azure blog. And the full report, which was the Forrester Wave Big Data Hadoop Cloud Solutions Q2 2016. You can get that from the Forrester website. Again, I'll make sure that link shows up in our show notes.
Interesting. Yes, they're all heading in the right direction. Hey, I've got one about media analytics being available in Azure Media Services. So if you're not familiar with Azure Media Services, it's, you know, sort of everything to do with video transcoding and all that sort of stuff. And media analytics add some new capabilities to do things like, what do they list here? Motion detection, speech transcription, deep indexed video search, and content moderation. So you can send it video and do those kinds of things. You know, it might be security camera footage or what have you, and do motion detection from in it or something along those lines, and go pull out speech transcription from videos and stuff like that. So if you're working with video and you need to do a bulk batch operations on that and do those kinds of things, then media analytics under the Azure Media Services umbrella, it might be a good choice for you to take a look at. That's pretty cool. It's obviously there's a ton of video being created, and the cloud lends itself to, you know, scaling up and down to get those sorts of jobs done. So take a look at Azure for that stuff.
Awesome. Hey, so we got Azure has also renamed a bunch of their services. This happens every once in a while. I'm sorry.
I was like, ka-dum-ts.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. That wasn't the sort of the crescendo of the joke.
No.
Gotcha.
No. So they rename a couple of their services. I know. Hey, you know, that does this from time to time. And Microsoft is famous for renaming stuff. So
I know you love it.
Oh my God, it's so annoying. And I know we see different. We don't see eye to eye on this. I mean, you have more of the marketing background. I know from the customer background. It drives me up the freaking wall. I mean, I was in a conversation recently with some people at Microsoft where they were like, yeah, we're thinking about renaming stuff from this to this. And it's like, I am not you don't want to hear my feedback, because my feedback is don't freaking rename it. Yeah, but the new name makes more sense. Like, yeah, anyway. So, hey, there were three things. So there were three things here that were renamed, and I'll just throw it out here because it's nice to drive awareness for this, that people are aware of it. So yeah. Azure has a service called DevTest. This was renamed. The previous name for it was MSDN DevTest Pay-As-You-Go. It has now been renamed to Pay-As-You-Go DevTest. Okay. Yeah, there you go.
Got it.
They just dropped MSDN really from the name and kind of switched things around.
Oh, I see. MSDN disappeared. Gotcha.
Yep. They also used to have a name for this was highlighted a bit at Build, but their machine learning API services, that's what it used to be called, ML API services, that has been renamed to the cognitive services. So they've now had all the new machine learning API stuff is now labeled under cognitive stuff. And then the other part was around speech API. They renamed some stuff for the Microsoft Cognitive Services. So beginning in July 1st, all of these, actually, I believe, so for the cognitive services one, for machine learning API services, and for this one around speech API, these names take effect on July the 1st. For the dev test one, they didn't really say when that's effective. I didn't see that in the call out, but they had the previous names were things like short form speech API, long form speech API, text to speech API, Those were the previous names, the new names. They're now going to standardize on Bing Speech short form API, Bing Speech long form APIs, and Bing Speech text to speech. So really just adding for any of the speech API stuff, they're just adding in the new marketing term for Bing Speech at the front of those things.
Gotcha. So a bit of branding realignment, so to speak.
Exactly, yeah.
I've got another one for our Canadian friends. Azure is now generally available in Canada.
There you go.
New data centers available in Toronto and Quebec City, and bringing the total current Azure regions to 24. Ah. 24 generally available, I should say. And then there is 8 more on the way.
Wow, very cool.
With some of them locations to be announced, and some have been announced, but the ones that we're still waiting on are the US DoD East and West region, Germany Central, Germany Northeast, United Kingdom South, United Kingdom West, and Korea Central and Korea South. So that's huge. And you can go, actually, there's a good page up on azure.microsoft.com/regions, which shows you where in the world Azure is. And you lose track of all these things, but they are everywhere.
Yeah, they really are.
So for our Canadian friends, I don't know if we may have touched on this coming in a previous show, but Azure in Canada is now generally available. So you can go pick those from regions, which is pretty nice.
Very cool. Yeah, so I've got another one here. In the Azure Redis Cache had a bunch of feature updates that they announced in May. This was announced in a blog post on June the 1st, and I'll make sure we have a link to this in the show notes. You may have seen this show up in our Twitter feed as well, but they've got a couple things here. So first is a public preview of import-export. So it's going to give you the ability to import and export data into and out of your Redis cache database. So this is exported as an RDB file. Hmm. This is going to allow you to do, like to say, I love this phrase in our technology world. You can take a dump of your Redis cache. You can also add a dump import to your Redis cache if you want to just throw a dump in there. And also being able to take snapshots of the cache. These are all things that came from their cache user voice feedback form that they've added in. So these are in public preview.
You can take a dump on your cache all day.
Exactly, yeah. There's also new things for new performance counters and Redis metrics, also enabling diagnostics through PowerShell, configuring settings for your Redis databases and memory optimization. You can do that now and have more settings available to you. One that I thought was pretty darn cool, I guess there's two other footnotes here. Global region availability, now it's available. You can now do Redis cache even in the China and the government data centers and a bunch of compliance and certification. So things like PCI data standards are now also listed. But hey, the one that I liked a lot is I started playing around with Redis cache for a project is the cache advisor. So this kind of actually builds off the database recommendations that I talked about for SQL Azure or Azure SQL database in our Know Your Cloud last month. What this does is it'll allow you to monitor the health of your Redis cache and suggest recommendations if it detects that your app's performance may be impacted. It even works if you haven't enabled cache or enabled diagnostics on your cache. So, for example, what they say here is that a common symptom for performance being impacted is timeout exceptions in the client app. These exceptions can happen for a variety of reasons, one being that is based on the current usage of Redis cache could be exceeding the recommended thresholds for network bandwidth. So it shows a bunch of things that they can actually recommend, help you, and even say, go through and make the changes or even upgrade from one plan to another one in Redis to make your life a heck of a lot easier.
Very cool. Actually, we're struggling with that exact problem right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Where our Redis cache is not performing fast enough. So I might go take a look at that.
Yeah, might actually help you there, TJ. They got some work that's been done.
Hey, AC, just when you thought you didn't need another cloud login, Slack have launched login with Slack.
So can you think of why you would need that? Why you would actually use that as a federated authentication provider?
No, I can't.
Okay, I can't either.
I mean, no, I still can't.
Yeah.
I mean, you're either a Google Apps customer or you're a Office 365 customer. And both of those seem like fairly reasonable cloud logins to me.
Oh, man.
So,
yeah.
And to be honest, if I, we use Slack at work and we actually haven't federated our Slack environment with with Office 365 yet, but it's kind of on my backlog of stuff to do. And of all things I would do, I'd rather go federate Slack with Azure AD, and so I can sign into Slack with my Office 365 credentials, not the other way around.
I totally agree. I see four different things that I want to use to federate. I've got my Facebook account, my Twitter account, my Gmail or Google account, and my Azure AD account that I use with Office 365. And if it's work-related, that kind of puts it into to Azure AD. If it's work-related that's not federated with AD, I usually use Google. And then if it's anything consumer stuff, then it's like Twitter or Facebook. And I don't really need any more. In fact, I need fewer of the ones that I'm using right now.
Yeah, and let's be fair. I do not see any enterprises or businesses thinking that their corporate login should be their Slack login. Have you seen Slack's login system? It's bloody awful.
Do you think so?
Yeah. You've got a different login for every Slack network or whatever you want to call it. You know, in the client app, if you belong to four different, you know, Slack networks or whatever you want to call them, you got to add four of them. There's no single sign on and get all your networks. You've got to add each one and you've got to log in for each one. It's absurd.
You know, it's funny because...
So now you want me to sign into an enterprise app and remember which one of my Slack logins to use.
Okay, so it doesn't really bother me. I mean, I can understand why it bothers you. It doesn't, for some reason, it doesn't bother me. I look at it when I compare it to something like, you know, which is Slack is compared to a lot as far as Microsoft is concerned with Yammer. And I like the way that Slack does it a hell of a lot more, and I like the way Yammer does it. I do like the fact that Yammer allows me to integrate with Azure AD, but I don't like...
I like it that Yammer has one username and password if you're not using federated auth.
Yeah.
One username and password for all your networks, at least.
I like that. But what I don't like about it is that, let's say I work for Microsoft. Here's a good example. I used to have an Office 365 ID with Critical Path Training when I was one of the owners of the company. And when I stopped being one of the owners of the company, I really stopped using that email. Every Yammer network that I had connected to that email, I lost access to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get why they do it, but I still hate it. I like the fact that I like Skype's approach more, where every network every team in Slack has a unique login. I would love it if they could all let me log in with Azure AD, so I could still effectively have one login, but each one is independent.
Yeah.
And then instead of how Yammer does it, where it's one login for everything and I could lose access to everything that I'm connected to.
I just find it super irritating that every time I go on a new device, I've got to add each one of my teams.
Yeah.
And they've got different usernames and passwords and different profile pictures and different everything. So anyway, sounds like a nightmare to me. Anyway,
yeah.
So they're launching a sign-in with Slack option, which I recommend nobody uses.
Yeah, I don't get it. Hey, I got one last news bit for us here. Last week was the Indianapolis 500, the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500. I'm a big gearhead, big rig race fan. Fantastic race. Didn't finish the way I was hoping it would finish, but I love the race. It was a relatively clean race, no massive accidents. So it got through nice and healthy, but Microsoft actually was involved in it because they used a company called Blue Metal, which I know there's a couple of friends of ours that work there and that are involved with it. I know a guy named Scott Jameson and Donald Collin is over there. But these guys worked with Microsoft and the Indy 500 to do a bit of IoT and sucking in a bunch of data from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and creating a new race control app that was used and surfaced at the race and for also streamed online.
Very nice.
I didn't see that they did this until after the race, and I was using the official IndyCar app. I don't know if they're one and the same. I hate how you have to be a Verizon customer to be able to see like the live data and the audio and all that stuff from the audio from the teams and stuff. But it was helpful to have that app up there. I mean, of all things, I mean, different sports. I mean, having that as a nice technical option to be able to have your iPad or laptop up while you're watching a race and seeing things like, you know, how many laps since the last pit stop, you can see when laps were coming up. And I was talking to Jeremy Thake and Matt Bremer, and I were on a chat during the race going back and forth. And I'm like, yeah, you know, watch out for these two guys, because if they decide to go for it, they're going to stretch their fuel mileage to the very end. And sure enough, one of the guys, you know, Rossi, the guy that won, you could see he was doing that. And Sebastian Bourdain was doing the same thing as well. So it worked out for Rossi and did not work out for my guy, James Hinchcliffe. But
yeah, it was a cool race though. It's nice.
Yeah. So cool article on that. I'll post that up in our show notes.
Excellent. One last one from me before we wrap up. Salesforce bases new services on Amazon's cloud. So what was interesting about this is not Azure. And Microsoft and Salesforce have been pretty chummy the last couple of years and doing a bunch of things together. And so this was kind of a little interesting to me, or surprising, I guess, that that Salesforce decided to do this on Amazon. And they reckon that the deal, or the speculation in the media, that the deal is worth $400 million to Amazon. So that's a boatload of money. So
it's a bit of cash. Terms.
Yes, it certainly is. So this was up on the Wall Street Journal. You can go read that. It's not obviously shifting all of their business to it, but it's building certain parts of their platform out on Amazon's cloud. So I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, very cool.
Yes. Hey, now, picks.
Yes, sir. We haven't done one of these in a little bit.
Yeah, let's. I've got a couple. I've got two short ones. So why don't you kick us off with a couple of picks?
All right. So I'll do my first one, which is basically it's much more on the consumer side. So Google announced a new keyboard for iOS devices. It's called the Gboard, Gboard. And I'll put a link to their announcement blog post. I just installed it 2 or 3 days ago. I was using on my iPhone and on my iPad. I was using one called Swipe, and I just got rid of Swipe because Gboard is awesome. I actually found out about this from an Apple employee when I went to take my phone to get the screen replaced from dropping it on Tile and picking up a new case. Go figure, they were one and related. But this one's pretty cool. I love how you can swipe both on iOS on an iPhone and an iPad. It works great. I love the search built right into the keyboard. I never thought I needed it until I played with it. I don't really need it, but it's a great thing to have. And all around, it works really well. I don't like the fact that when I'm in Slack, I lose my carriage return or my enter key to create a new line, which really sucks when you are copying links from another message in Slack and pasting it in and trying to add your own comment. So that one doesn't work. I have to switch back and forth. But yeah, definitely. So I'll put a link to that. So very, very cool. I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I, wearing my tinfoil hat, chose to stay away from it because I'm like, Google don't need to know any more about me. They don't need to know my keystrokes as well.
Gotcha.
So I got my tinfoil hat on that one.
Fair enough.
Hey, so as part of a threesome with Nintex and ShareGate, Hyperfish are the proud sponsor of the Global SharePoint Survey 2016.
Ooh.
So you can head over to globalsharepointsurvey.com and you can win one of three X-Star quadcopters that we're giving away.
Ooh.
In return for some information about your SharePoint deployments and things. So we're gathering some details about it. We'll do some blogs and some tweets about the results and the winners and all that sort of stuff. But we're trying to gain a bit more insight about the state of SharePoint and Office 365 usage. And it's got a particular bent on IT pros and admins this year. So we're going to run it each year and sort of measure things over time. But this year is focused on IT pros and administrators of SharePoint and how they're using it on-prem and online. So globalsharepointsurvey.com, go win yourself a quadcopter.
Ah, very cool. Very cool.
It's got a camera, 4K camera.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go through this. Man, hey, that's pretty cool. It's cool to see that your company is sponsoring it too. And two other great companies as well, Nintex and ShareGate. So awesome. So my last pick is Sitespeed.io. What Sitespeed.io does is it looks at a website and does a bunch of metric testing against it. There's different metrics that you can use from groups or programs called YSLO, and Google's got one as well. And I've used a site called GT Matrix to actually do a test of my speed, the speed of my different sites. What Sitespeed.io does is it's a tool that you can install as an NPM package and include it as part of your build pipeline to export a report. And they also have info on their site on how you can spin up these things called, it's a site called Graphite or utilities called Graphite and Grafana, which allow you to graph all this different data, and you can do it all for free. So it's pretty cool. They show you how to go about doing it. It's a thing that I've kind of integrated into two or three different little projects that I'm playing around with to see how well it works. And it's just a nice way to add speed testing to your continuous integration and see different metrics pop up if you've got issues with your page download and page size and stuff. And it's been very insightful for a couple different sites that I'm working on. So definitely very cool.
Very nice. Yeah. Actually, we use a similar tool, which was actually going to be my second pick. So it's like we're reading our minds, called Runscope. So runscope.com, for API monitoring and testing. And so it does a similar kind of thing, can watch your APIs, it can test them periodically, it can time them, you can fire alerts for things taking too long, all that sort of stuff. So runscope.com for some API monitoring and testing.
Very cool.
Excellent. Well, thanks, AC. Great show. Get through some news and some picks and some Know Your Microsoft Cloud.
Bingo. Sounds good, man. So another show in the books, 132.
Boom. Have a good one.
You too, man.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.